Fight Nation.
Junkie Nation, it's time to roll, baby, on MMA Junkie Radio with Gorgeous George and Go. This is what we do and why we do it, baby. We rollin'!
Covering MMA from all over the world, this is the premier stop for all your combat sports needs. MMA Junkie Radio, the only show broadcasting live from the Mandalay Bay Resort and Casino in the fight capital of the world, Las Vegas, Nevada. The lights are on and the mics are hot. It's time to get your MMA fix, junkies. Take it away, Big John.
Gorgeous George and Goes, are you ready? Junkie Nation, are you ready? Well, let's get it on.
From the fight capital of the world and the beautiful studios here in Costa Mesa, California, KOCI 101.5 FM, you're listening to the MMA Junkie Radio Show, the only show that matters. I'm your host, Gorgeous George. With me, as always, is the devious and dastardly Goes, our ace co-host. Also joining him is Richard Hunter from CBS Sports and the Phone Booth Fighting Podcast. And, of course, back east handling the producing duties, Jumbo Josh. What's up, fellas?
What up?
Hey.
Boy, can we just have a normal day of MMA?
Not talk, today.
Like, I was just X's thinking and that. O's and... staying away from the TMZ side and the drama.
I told Goes that you know you're in for a rocky edition of MMA Junkie when you have to specify on your show run sheet which restraining order you're talking about in which segment.
Mm-hmm. You are correct, sir. So the game plan goes out the window partially. You know, we're still going to run the ball. We're still going to score a bunch of TDs, except we're going to start off a little bit different now. Here is the news that we've heard in the last hour, broken on MMA Junkie by the magnificent Steven Morocco, one of our top writers. And it's something that was lukewarm about a week ago when Jeff Sherwood, former Sherdog, founder of Sherdog, but former writer and editor over at Sherdog, had hinted on social media that there may be some problems with Tony Ferguson and, you know, personal problems. And so here's the news that I have to share with you guys, and it's so unfortunate, but it's not like a catastrophic 10 out of 10. Here's why. Tony Ferguson's wife has filed a restraining order after multiple police visits to the home. That's the headline. Now let's break down what's happened, because I know you're all assuming, did he put his hands? No, he did not put his hands on her, looks like. But still, very concerning. Here we go. The wife of Tony Ferguson, Christina, on Wednesday filed a restraining order against her husband alleging domestic violence. And remember, I'll get to why it's not the catastrophic version. This was done in Orange County Superior Court, and the court's Domestic Violence Prevention Services Project has a scheduled investigation for March 22nd. That's a week from tomorrow. A domestic violence hearing is scheduled for April 5th. So details were not, it's not a long list of them here, but I'll go through some of the allegations made by Christina Ferguson. The court, first of all, the court's definition of a domestic violence restraining order is, quote, an order that helps protect people from abuse or threats of abuse from someone else that they have a close relationship with. So as we charge along here, Stephen Morocco was able to obtain five police incident reports that detail several domestic disturbances at the Ferguson residence since January of 2018. So that has been here the last, 14 months, including three, though, the past month. The police reports were redacted to protect certain identifying information. Tony Ferguson was not arrested or charged with a crime in any of those situations. So what is happening here, guys, is after reading it all, they've been doing welfare checks on Tony. I think the wife is just not afraid. Hasn't been struck by Tony Ferguson in any way. He hasn't laid any hands on her, but I think she's concerned for his well-being. You see what I'm saying? That's mm-hmm. why I read the definition earlier. And you know, with them having a kid together, when the kid is in, you know, under the care of Tony, I guess that's why she's got to go kind of this legal route. Again, no arrest has been made, and he has not struck her. Now, in a few minutes, we're going to be joined by Stephen Morocco, and he can clarify a little bit more of this because he's got extensive notes. He's the one that's been following this for the last 7 days, and again, this broke today on MMA Junkie. So this is tremendously unfortunate. You know, Ferguson's been that fighter who's got such an abundance of energy and an amazing record in the UFC, and everybody just loves matching him up with everybody that you can think of in the lightweight division, and he's been playing a different set of hands, of poker, you know what I mean? And, you know, sitting out, interim title shots and whatever. But I guess now we're kind of starting to put the pieces together as to maybe why he couldn't accept. Maybe this was tied to it, or maybe the promotion was looking out for him. Who knows? We're going to try and piece that all together. Stephen Morocco will join us in about 4 minutes. But my immediate reaction is, again, I am concerned about this young man, and hopefully whatever he is struggling with, he can get the help so that he's ready to, you know, conduct himself as a professional athlete in our sport. And hopefully, if there isn't irreconcilable differences, hopefully he can get his family back together and everything will be all well and dandy. But Goz and Richard, man, what are your guys' thoughts when you saw this?
Well, I think right away, when you read the story, you can kind of feel where she's coming from, right, with all the details. And it just seems like somebody that's noticed a lot of erratic behavior and is kind of looking out for her family at that point, right? It sucks because the first thing that people are going to want to point to is CTE. You know, we're in a sport where that happens a lot. We see it with football players. We see it with boxers. I think that's the first thing that people are going to start to look at, because Tony is always I don't want to use the word that, like, I don't want to use weird, but he's just always been a little different. You know, when
eccentric.
You just, yeah, when you have a conversation with him, he'll give you different types of answers. So I wouldn't necessarily – it would probably take me a little bit to notice if something was off. And so with what's going on, I kind of – some of it might be, like, preventative, just to make sure, give him time to get right. But, yeah, when you read some of the headlines, you're going to think right away that something horrific is going on. And it's not always like that. And I'm glad that you read the definition, George, because it is a little bit of a different – case, but now some of the pieces make a little bit more sense as to why he didn't take certain fights and some of the things Dana White says. But what'd you think, Richard?
Well, it clearly looks like he's having mental issues, and if you look at the reporting that Stephen Morocco did on MMA Junkie, the specifics of the incidents, the reports from his wife, are things like, I came home and he had changed the locks, not because he was mad at me, he thought he needed to. Then I came home another day and he had taken the fireplace apart brick by brick because he heard voices in the walls and he believed someone had planted a computer chip in his leg. Now, if you've ever talked to a police officer, like somebody who just works a beat, they always have stories about, oh, this one lady, we get 23 calls to her house a year and we go out there and she says that, you know, the government's spying on her and she's wearing a tinfoil hat and that kind of stuff. I mean, this sort of description of, like, paranoia is what it is, mm-hmm. paranoid behavior. And it always involves computer chips and government surveillance and that kind of stuff. Black helicopters are following me. That's not at all an unusual story, but it always is indicative of some sort of mental instability. Now, normally those people are just observed, or I guess in extreme cases they're taken in for their own safety. But what makes this so unusual is that this is an elite MMA fighter. This is a young person, not an old person. This is someone who isn't in and out of an institution, but also somebody who, you know, could potentially be a physical danger, maybe not intentionally, but he's got that skill set. So I think you have to be very careful about that, especially where a wife and a young child are involved. So the set of circumstances is honestly not all that unusual, save the fact that he is a world famous mixed martial artist. You know, the other thing to consider too here is that in this day and age, in the current climate of the internet and access to information and everybody's podcast and all that kind of thing, as long as, you know, this is nothing new in terms of somebody having those kind of mental instability issues, but if you think about it, what is very accessible to those types of people who have those mental instability issues now are the Alex Jones podcasts and the we're being ruled by lizard people and, you know, all that kind of stuff, to where if you are having some sort of mental issue that you're predisposed to that kind of thing, boy, it sure is more accessible now as far as being able to fan those flames a little bit. Not saying that's what's happening here, but it's worth considering.
Now, they did reach out to the wife for comment and Tony for comment and his management team as well, but we haven't been able to catch up with anybody, you know, to get comment from other sides. Paradigm, which is the representatives for Tony Ferguson, they were able to just put out a small statement that it's a private affair, you know what I mean? And it says, this is a private family matter that is in the process of being resolved. So for now, there's just not much to add, I guess, from other parties. I believe we're going to be joined by Steve Morocco. Is he ready to go, Josh?
He's ready.
All right, awesome. The Magnificent Morocco, he broke the story earlier today, 90 minutes ago. He joins us now on the hotline. What's up, Steven? How you doing?
Hey, George. Long time no talk.
Yeah, exactly. Okay, bud. So I take it all of this started from Jeff Sherwood's tweet about 7 days ago, maybe?
Yes. That is correct. I and about 20 other reporters called to see what had happened, to see if there was any documentation, any police reports that had been filed. Doing a little bit more digging. So initially, what I was told by the person that was on duty at the desk was that there hadn't been a crime committed, so therefore there was no police report. So okay. I then went back to them and said, well, can I get the police logs? Can I get your call log? Can I get the notes from the visit? And basically any documentation of what happened during that call. So I got you're from Santa Ana, right? Santa Ana is like
the mean streets of Santa Ana.
Yeah, get it right, Steve.
Literally the fastest response I've ever gotten on a public records request. Usually, you know, I file FOIAs all the time and it takes forever. And these guys were turning it around in 24 hours, fully redacted too. So I got this information. It had information that painted a much clearer picture of what had happened through the police notes that were written by the people on scene. So that's where you get a lot of the details. Because there wasn't what the guy was referring to about no crime being committed, when these guys showed up at the house this past Friday, Tony Ferguson, you know, is obviously, he's still the son's father. You know, they're still married. There was mm-hmm. no custody order. He hadn't committed a crime. He had changed the locks in the house. But from the police perspective, they couldn't do anything at that moment. So what I was told was that she went straight to the courthouse and she filed a restraining order. We didn't see that. We actually sent somebody to the courthouse on Monday. Our boy Dave Mandel went to the courthouse on Monday, looked through the docs, couldn't find anything. But as it turns out, it popped up in the system today, and that's when we got at least the notification of the restraining order. We don't know what's in the restraining order because that's not actually we're not allowed to access that online due to the fact that it's a family law case. When it's a domestic violence case, it's you can't just get these things online like you would a regular lawsuit. So that's where we're at right now. We're probably going to be requesting body cam footage and 911 audio if we can get it. I'm probably going to hit up the UFC early tomorrow probably early tomorrow and take it from there.
When I hear custody, I immediately think, do you know if the couple has been together or have they not been together recently?
According to the docs, they've been together for 6 years.
Okay. All right. Let me turn it over to the guys in Vegas. Goes and Richard, what do you have for Steven Morocco?
Steven, this, you know, everything that happened here, is this something that you know to the best of your recollection? How long has the symptoms of the of this been going on? We were talking a little earlier. I think the word that Richard used was it's eccentric.
Yeah.
Tony can be a little different with some of his answers, and I can see how some people would say, hey, that guy's a little different, right? But nobody would ever take it to this point. Do you know, roughly, aside from what the police report says, how long has this been kind of going on?
I only know what's in the police reports, and I can't really speculate as to Tony's mental state other than what you and I and everybody in the MMA world has seen. Obviously, we know Tony is an eccentric guy. That doesn't necessarily make him mentally ill. However, some of the details in these reports suggest very strongly that there's something going on. As far as what we saw in the police reports, they're pretty heavily redacted, and part of that redaction was a lot of the adjectives and the formal words that you might use to describe a state of being. And what the Santa Ana PIO, the public information officer, told me was that it was a let's see if I have my quote here. It's like a health issue, and he kind of it's health related. That's what he said. He said medical first, and then he said health related. So he was kind of he said, "You're a smart guy. You can put it together. I think we can all put it together as to what was going on." Or what was perceived, what was going on at that time. But all I have as far as Tony's mental state are what I see in the documents. They first visited the house in the incidents that I have access to go back to January 2018. There wasn't anything until very recently, until February. So there's an extended period where it appears nothing happened, or at least the police weren't involved. But, you know, as far as when it became an issue, I think we can probably safely say January 2018 as far as enough of an issue that it attracted law enforcement.
Stevens, Richard Hunter here. Two questions. The first being, were you able to glean from the law enforcement what the normal protocol for something like this would be on a wellness check? So, for example, if they get a call to the home, hey, somebody is exhibiting symptoms of paranoia, they're hearing voices and they think somebody's planted a computer chip in them, the kind of things you detailed in your story, if the cops show up out there, is it their discretion? Do they have the ability, even if the wife isn't saying he was violent toward her or anything like that, do they have the ability to say, hey, for this person's own well-being, like a 5150 kind of thing, we're going to take them in for observation or some kind of psychiatric hold? Or did they not have the ability to do that? Do you know?
Well, let me tell you what happened on the 16th of February, because I have the thing in front of me. What happened was that Christina called the police from a park outside the house. She said she was worried for her husband's well-being. They went to the house together. One of the police officers, Sergeant Gutierrez, he actually comes up in the documents very regularly. And actually, at one point in these documents, it says, call Sergeant Gutierrez for a download, basically. It says, Sergeant Gutierrez knows what's going on. So Sergeant Gutierrez called Tony on his cell phone, had Tony come out of the house. Actually, Tony ended up inviting him into the house. They spoke. He advised, this sergeant advised Tony of his the resources that were available to him, and then advised him to speak with a doctor. That's when Tony agreed to see a doctor. But the final note here says that Tony Ferguson was not a danger to himself or others and was not gravely disabled. That's a judgment call I think that officers have to make if they're going to take an action like declare somebody like, you know, 5150. I'm not sure what the technical term is in Santa Ana. But I believe that if they're going to make that call, they have to see a series of behaviors. And from everything that I can see, when they showed up at the house, Tony Ferguson was not, you know, in the middle of an episode. Like the episode this past Friday, he spoke to the officers. I didn't get any sense that he was combative or anything that would show outwardly like this guy is in the middle of a mental health crisis. So that is important to consider, because there's two things that I think or leading people down a certain path. When you read this story, you know, it's a domestic violence story. It implies that she has been violent. From what she has, you know, disclosed to police, he hasn't been violent, at least from what I've seen. This is part of a procedure that gets set in motion when these sorts of things happen, when there are these repeated domestic incidents. And I think this has a lot to do with the custody of the kid. I probably rambled a little bit too much there. Sorry.
No, Stephen, great job, man. Thank you very much for the time. We appreciate it. I'm sure there'll be lots to follow up on this, and I'm sure you'll be leading the way. So thank you very much for your spot, man.
All right. Thanks, guys.
All right. Thank you. Follow him on Twitter, at MMA Junkie Steven. All right, boys. Lots to unpack here. I want to talk about this. Let's take a quick break here. You're listening to MMA Junkie Radio on Fight Nation Channel 93. We'd love to get your thoughts as well, Junkie Nation. And you know you can call in and participate throughout the show at 877-FIGHT-93. 877-FIGHT-93. We want to hear from you, so call in, and we'll be right back.
They were forged from the same ball sack, but act as though they've never met. They are the Brothers Garcia, Gorgeous George, and Goes.
SiriusXM has coverage of the biggest college basketball conference tournaments all week long. At 9 Eastern, the ACC tournament continues in Charlotte, with third-seeded Duke facing Syracuse. Hear the action on Channel 81 and streaming on your phone, and at home on SiriusXM connected devices and speakers. Jeez, that's a beast of a conference if Duke is seeded third. Holy cow. I can imagine the Tar Heels are up there, and I wonder who the strong number two team is. But, wow, Duke at number three just in a conference? That is crazy. All right, we are joined by Richard Hunter in studio. He's our co-host for the Thursday, March 14th episode here that you're listening to. And we are reacting to the big news of the day. Tony Ferguson's wife has filed a restraining order after multiple police visits to the home. Don't worry, fans, thinking the worst. He has not laid hands on her. There's not been any arrests. And you think you'll figure things out here as we're talking about this, that there might be other concerns here. What I used to hear was a term in boxing before I even crossed over to MMA as a fan and now as a media member was pugilistic dementia. And the article written by the magnificent Stephen Morocco is kind of extensive. You know, it talks a little bit about certain episodes in which Tony just is not acting normal. And so there's definitely some concerns there. We definitely hope the best for Tony and his family and his health first before any fight bookings or any MMA talk, at least going forward. He's always seemed like such a nice fella when we've had him on the show. And I know Ghost can attest to this. And Richard, your interactions, I'm sure you can chime in. But every time I'm done talking to Tony Ferguson, whether it's been in person or on the phone, as soon as we're done, I always turn and go, man, that was legit. Like, I'm pumped for that guy's fight. Or I'm just pumped to cover this fighter, you know, and whatever they got going on next. And
100%.
And this really, really saddens me. You know, this really, really saddens me. He's a great fighter, and he's just gotten a little bit of the shaft, in my opinion. I mean, how can you be 12-1 in the UFC and still not be fighting for the undisputed title? Just a victim of a lot of bad luck, and now maybe other concerns. Go ahead.
No, to your first point, you know, I've always said about him long before he was main eventing, when you interviewed him about his fight, he could have been, you know, on the fight pass prelims or, you know, whatever it was back in the day. But he would always make you feel like that fight, I can't miss that fight. That fight is important to watch. You know, he sold me on that idea. And to me, more than eccentric, when I think about a characteristic that describes him, it's always been that primarily. I mean, the sad thing about stuff like this is, you know, you're right to point out, George, that you know, he's not being violent toward his wife or any kind of thing like that. But sometimes with these situations, if they're not properly neutralized and treated, somebody may just not be in their right mind to know what's happening. I mean, they're a danger to themselves, but they can also be a danger around other people, not because they have a malicious intent or they're bad people, but, man, things just aren't going right in their head. Mm-hmm. And what I think is going to be so important first and foremost in this situation, apart from, you know, law enforcement doing the right thing, is the UFC, not only the UFC, but his gym, his training partners, the people, everybody needs to make sure they don't inadvertently enable even a small part of this. If he comes, so I'm fine, let's train, let's spar, yeah, it's all fine, it's all good, everything's fixed. Let's be triply sure that's the case before anybody puts him back into harm's way again.
Yeah. All right, let's take this quick call right now. We got Marco in Waco, Texas, and then we'll continue talking about this because there's a couple other angles I want to cover. But if you want to follow Marco, it's 877-FIGHT-93, 877-344-4893. Marco from Waco, what's up?
Marco from Waco, Roy. ¿Qué pasa, Vado? San Richard Hunter.
Hey.
What's up?
Hola.
So, well, the good news, I guess, is that there was no physical altercation of anything, and if Tony needs help, Tony help. But all these restraining orders, man, I mean, yesterday something break out about Anthony Rumble Johnson, you know, not the first time, by the way, that a girlfriend put a restraining order against him or somebody that he was dating, and then we got this Conor crap with the phone. MMA fighters need to stop getting into freaking trouble with the law, man. Come on, dude. I guess it takes a special kind, huh? I don't know, man. I'm rooting for Tony, you know, if he's mental issues, you know, I mean, he gets hit on the head for a freaking living, for crying out loud. So, you know, all this talk about CTE and brain trauma, maybe we might have to take a closer look and just wait and see approach right now. Wait and see approach. Peace out, guys. Catch you guys next time.
See you, bud. Okay. One thing I wanted to say, guys, was in the report that Stephen Morocco did, it talks about five different incidents, all dating all the way back to February of 2018. Tony Ferguson has not been active in the last year. But since February of 2018, which was 14 months ago, he did have one fight, October 6, 2018. What I'd like to know is those around him, who was aware, like, were those just minimal Eddie Bravo-esque type of, you know, comments that were being made? You know, I bet you the Martians are amongst us. You know, whatever. Minor stuff that you can laugh off. Shout out to Richard Hunter. He's the one that pointed out that, you know, one of his coaches is Eddie Bravo, who for many years, as we all know, is a tinfoil guy. But, you know, could it have been minor stuff then that maybe, like, everyone just giggles off and doesn't think much of? Or was any of the serious stuff happening then? And if so, you know, was anybody irresponsible along the way? That's why I'd love to talk to somebody from his camp, because I would hate for that to be the case. That would be so sad if anybody from his camp and or the UFC camp knew of this. You don't want to add to it. I think you want the man to get healthier first, then see if he's ready to continue fighting. I don't ever want to think that our sport, you know, prize fighting in general, whether it's the dollar as the motivator or security or who knows what, is bigger than the health of and the health and well-being of athletes.
I think Richard made a good point in the sense that in Tony's mind, what he's saying seems right. Mm-hmm. It doesn't seem weird to him, right? And so the people that usually pick up on things like that are like family members, coworkers, because they're with you for long periods of times. People with these issues aren't like this all the time. There's just certain spells that they go through. And then, you know, if you're around them for long enough, you'll go, well, wait a minute, that's odd. You weren't like that a little while ago. And so that's why it's kind of hard to diagnose, because when you catch it and you finally convince somebody, hey, you need help, that person goes and they may not be experiencing any of that. So it takes a while for somebody to actually be able to diagnose exactly what you have. They have to talk to you, have to figure things out. And even in this day and age, we were talking about this during the break, it's like, well, what is, like, what we consider sane and not? People could walk into an office and say, flat earth, flat earth. And they'll be, if you go on your Facebook or your Instagram or your Twitter, there's thousands of people that are like, right on, brother, flat earth. Like, it's actually kind of hard to diagnose, but it's relatively easy to get that clearance from a doctor, and really, that's all you need. Is if people are just going to point, well, the doctor said he was good. That's why we let him fight.
And I think what's going to be the defining line between what Goes is talking about, which is maybe conversations people have, and actions, are going to be things like some of the things that are in that report, like taking the fireplace apart. You know, once you're seeing things like that happen, obviously now there's serious cause for concern. Now, I'll say this, and I have no personal knowledge as to, I don't know Tony's wife or anything like that, but I will say this, you know, every wife of a fighter may not have as active a role with their coaches, training partners, things like that. You know, now in some cases, there are coaches who are more afraid of a fighter's wife than they are the fighter, who I may or may not host a podcast with. That would be one example. But nobody wants to get on the wrong side of Jennifer Meir. But what I'm saying is that, you know, depending on the circumstance, she may not have the easiest path to just pick up the phone, call a coach, and go, hey, you need to take me seriously here, something bad is happening. I mean, she may be more distant from his training and things like that. So if he's not the one saying, hey, something's wrong, or the coaches aren't picking up on it, and I'm just giving them the benefit of the doubt right now, they may be hearing those stories for the first time about taking the walls apart and voices in the walls and all that. I hope that's the case, because to George's earlier point, if it's not, if there is anybody that was in any way complicit in this, then that's going to be another tough conversation people are going to have.
I want to bring up something that the caller, Marco from Waco, brought up. And just in general, there are certain things that, yeah, I mean, I guess you could look at it in Anthony Johnson or a Conor McGregor and say, hey, come on, guys, clean up your act. Something like this, I mean, this just kind of happens to people, right? But I've brought this up so many times in the past. When the UFC sold and the Fertittas walked away, people were wondering, what, you guys are making money hand over fist. Why would you go? And the one thing that I always pointed to was, there is a shitstorm coming with this. And the NFL is the model that you could see and go, whoa, I don't want none of that. I thought they sold at a perfect time, because I think now that we have this like first generation of fighters, now even like a second generation where you had the tough guys. I mean, there's only one active tough one fighter.
Right.
You're starting to see some of these stories come out, and we're starting to see some of these fighters and go, wait a minute, he doesn't sound the same way. It happened in boxing. It happens in the NFL. I think that they forecasted something like this was going to come, and I think that's part of their decision as to why they sold the UFC.
It's a great point, because I have always said up to this point, when I'm having the layman's discussion about MMA versus boxing and football and the health risks involved, and maybe part of it's been wishful thinking on my part up to this point, but I've always pointed to the fact that, well, you know, in boxing, you're taking hundreds of blows that are not knockout blows. In MMA, sure, maybe somebody gets knocked out cold, but it's usually one punch and that's the end of the fight. And I've always used that as evidence to say, hey, boxing may end up cumulatively being more dangerous than MMA or football, too, for that matter, the number of blows that you're taking to the head. But I also think I wouldn't be fair if I wasn't saying that, what to acknowledge what you just said, Goes, is that we also have to look at the fact that MMA is a much younger sport than boxing and football. So will it also be to a degree that we're going to stand back and look over the decades and go, oh, okay, well, actually, we just didn't give it enough time to age long enough to see some of those long-term effects? Because I'm afraid maybe now we are.
Well, now we're in a different era where you're getting these kids that are starting the sport, right? Like, look at Randy Couture, how old he was when he started to do this, right? I mean, this is somebody that had a wrestling background and said, hey, I think I can do this mixed martial arts. Now you're getting kids that are sitting in classrooms, and when they pass around and go, what do you want to be, fireman, doctor? Somebody can raise their hand and say, I want to be a mixed martial artist. I want to fight in the UFC. And they start that at a young age. And what did you do when you were a kid? When you wanted to be Joe Montana, you went in the backyard and you threw passes. Don't think for a second that these kids aren't watching UFCs and going, let's go in the background, let's throw some gloves on. And like, they're starting to train at a younger age. Like you said, the sample size is going to be bigger over a longer period of time. Things are going to get dicey.
So Dana White, by the way, had been a little active on social media, and he responded to a question from, I guess, a fan. You know, they were asking about Tony Ferguson and his availability, and this is what Dana White said, quote, Dana, sorry, Tony is dealing with a lot of personal issues right now and can't fight. Hopefully things turn around for him and he can get back in there. That definitely had to be a preview of this forthcoming news that came out today. Mm-hmm. And you know what I want to see, guys? I want to see the UFC make a statement. It doesn't have to be extensive or anything, but something along the lines of like what Dana said, but the UFC is committed to their fighters and we're going to get him the help that he needs. However they want to word it, but I want to see them stand next to their fighters. They did that for Rampage Jackson years ago, again here in Orange County, when he went on the car chase, or what was it? You know,
Rampage.
It was a
slow speed chase. Yeah,
right. And Dana immediately, may have been Dana and Lorenzo, but I know it was at least Dana, flew right away from Las Vegas to Orange County, and he wanted to stand by his guy. Now I know that there's more on the roster now, and I know that maybe that hunger and that youth to be able to save everybody, it may not be there. But he definitely has more resources, and he definitely has more money. He can easily clear his schedule, hop on a flight, and come down. But if not, send somebody. But I would like to see the UFC be proactive. You guys brought up the NFL earlier, and the NFL gets critiqued a lot for certain plays, especially at the end of games. You see these onside kicks or all these kicks that go in the end zone. They basically just taken away special teams football when it comes to, again, the onside kick and kickoff returns. There's just not much of that that can come out of it. But, and sure, it takes away from a little bit of the fun and some of them hard hits. But I would like the UFC to recognize what has happened in other sports and also start to take steps forward. Other than to just say, it's the fight game, people get hurt, and, you know, these are grown men, and we put the tests out there, and we've made some investments out there when it comes to these different studies that are done. But after that, you know, hands off. I really would like to see them be a little bit more active with their fighters there, especially with that UFC PI that they have where they're, you know, they're patching them up and getting them right back ready for battle. You tore your knee? Come on down here. We'll do the surgery. We'll fix you up. Out for battle again. I would like them to start covering different things. And I'm glad that they've worked a lot on nutrition, because to add to Goz's point, the Fertitta's Goz, I think, saw three big red flags. Extreme weight cutting, traumatic brain injury, and then steroids. Huge, huge tip of the hat. They got USADA, you know, and they got the random testing. And you can say what you want about USADA. I know a lot of people have had issues with that, but I do believe the sport has been cleaned up. To what degree? I don't know. That's a whole other conversation. But weight cutting, it seems like they're working a lot more with the fighters. A few of them, they've penalized them and said, nope, you got to move up. And if things work out, maybe you can come down, you know, blah, blah, blah. But now I want to see something with TBI, anything related to TBI.
Yeah. You know, just to touch on that point of what can they do, I've been saying this for a long time. I think one of those steps is, all right, guys, championship fights, 5 rounds, but main events no longer, moving back to 3. Less sparring, less training camps. I think that's a step forward for something like that.
Yeah. I mean, you know, they have, like you just said, they have paid for surgeries. I think if I were just thinking of this purely from a PR standpoint right now for the UFC, I would suggest issuing a statement publicly, because they may be doing this privately, but publicly volunteering to pay for some mental evaluation. You know, just say, hey, the offer's out there. No different than we would if maybe somebody had a drug problem and we were going to offer to pay for some treatment. Just, you know, there won't be a downside if everything's okay. It's not like, you know, okay, you get checked. What's the best that can happen is you get checked out and they say everything's okay. But if there is anything to catch, it would certainly feel like they would be out ahead of the issue in that situation.
Let's talk to Mark in Toronto. What's up, Mark? How you doing?
Hey, guys, doing well. Just wanted to say I'm actually pretty, obviously, sad to hear what happened to Tony and his family, but I'm surprised by the reaction online I've been seeing. A lot of people are saying, are recognizing that it could be related to CTE and head trauma. I think 5 years ago, this conversation looks a lot different. I don't think people, you know, just recently, people are starting to wake up to this, and I wanted to get your guys' opinions. Like, what do you think versus 5 years ago, how do you think your reaction was or is now? You know what I mean? Compared to 5 years ago. Just want to
Can you specify a little bit more? You mean like if five years ago we got this same type of story, what would we be talking about or thinking? Is that what you mean?
Exactly. I think a lot more people would be quick to say, you know, it's domestic violence and just write them off. Whereas now people are like, Tony's been in a lot of wars. You know, these wars don't come for free. There's a price to pay. You know, things of that nature. I think it's a lot more commonplace now.
Okay. Thank you very much for the call. I'll start.
Thanks, sir.
5 years ago, I think it would have been very similar. Not looking for a pat on the back or anything, but Goz and I, we've been doing this for 12 years. I know Richard's logged quite a few years as well.
Yeah,
but if you hear this show enough, you've heard us talk about pro wrestling and how we've been in and out, in and out. We've gone through a lot of those eras as well. Steroid eras that they've had and the careers or lives that have been ended by fighters that took their own life. I mean, suicide was very prevalent in pro wrestling, and you've heard us talk about boxing as well. So I believe my reaction would have been the same. I've learned more about CTE and TBI through movies and reading, you know, literature. So maybe speak on it different, but I had a feeling that something like this could overtake our sport. I think that, you know, I think a lot of fighters are going to experience a lot with depression. Do you guys remember, was it Junie Browning? I don't want to throw out the names and get them wrong, but there was a few fighters off of Tough that were having problems as well. And I think a lot of it just comes from that depression of the fact that you were the man or you were the gal or whatever for years. And everybody wanted your attention, even if it was just a six-month run on The Ultimate Fighter, or maybe you did have a championship run. You know, collected a title, some title defenses, or you were a challenger or whatever, and you're the man. And then all of a sudden, in MMA, things can be really rough, really quick. You start losing, they cut you, and now all of a sudden, hey, those drinks you used to have that people were fighting to, you know, cover your bill, that ain't happening. That'll be $22, sir, for those, you know, three Bud Lights or whatever. The chicks aren't, you know, they're not tearing up your texts or anything like that. You just, that fall from grace, man. I remember we used to talk about that as well. So that's what I can say on my behalf. I think Goz would pretty much echo similarly, but I'd like to hear Goz and Richard react.
Well, go ahead, Richard.
No, I was just going to say, also consider this too, that just, you know, from the get-go, a large amount, a certain percentage of mental illness is going to go untreated just in society, in the world, right? So there's that. Not everybody's on top of every aspect of their health. Then you add to the fact that someone, and just statistically speaking, even if it's not through CTE, you're going to have people with mental issues that are going to find their way into this sport just like any other profession. But the fact that they are responsible for making a lot of people livings, and the very nature of the profession, which is violence, which is, it's controlled violence, but it's also the kind of, you know, if you try to choke out somebody at most people's workplace, you're going to get fired. In this case, it's part of the job. So most of the time, that's not going to be an issue, but if somebody is predisposed to having any kind of mental issues, and this is supposition on my part, but if that is the case, it might take even longer to get recognized because of the nature of the business that we're all talking about.
Oh, well said.
Mm-hmm. All right, let's take our break. It's MMA Junkie Radio on Fight Nation Channel 93. Stay close. We'll be right back. And we want to get you involved, so call in at 877-FIGHT-93, 877-344-4893.
They are the stretch marks on the underbelly of the MMA community. But hey, stretch marks are the new tats. They are Gorgeous George and Goz.
All right, Junkie Nation. We have been reacting to the big story of the day. Tony Ferguson's wife, UFC lightweight Tony Ferguson's wife, has filed a restraining order after multiple visits, police visits, to their home. And I want to be specific here as I update the story. He has not hurt his family in any way. They have a baby boy, and he's married, and they've been together for a while now. And he's not been arrested. And so if you've caught any part of the show, which, by the way, it's all available on the fabulous SiriusXM app. Check it out. Download it. Commercial-free, HD quality. But if you caught any or parts of what we've been talking about, since 2018, early part of 2018, there have been 5 police incident reports. And those reports detail several domestic disturbances at the Ferguson residence in Santa Ana, California. We have an article that was written by Stephen Morocco that talks about this. But if you dig into it a little bit, you can see that, again, there doesn't seem to be any danger for the family, because he hasn't touched his wife in any way. He hasn't struck his wife, and the kid's okay. It's just it looks like it might be an incident where Tony may just be having some issues. And I want to be careful about how I say this, but, you know, mental issues, perhaps an onset of pugilistic dementia, or maybe he's just, we've always said Tony Ferguson's a bizarre individual, and maybe what he's saying, guys, what if what he's saying, guys, has just been interpreted, you know, differently. Maybe in the onset, early on, you know, but that whole computer chip in his leg, that one had me a little bit concerned. But I thought for a while, you were right, Richard, with him training with Eddie Bravo and some of the crazy things that come out of his mouth. I thought, maybe he's being misdiagnosed by his family and friends. But I don't know. That doesn't appear to be the case.
Well, the thing that jumped out at me when I see drastic actions, like he took the fireplace apart because he thought there was someone in there, that's
right.
Now we've gone to a different level. Like, now, you know, there is genuine concern for his well-being. If there wasn't before, there certainly would be at that point.
Mm-hmm. Tony Ferguson has been active on Twitter. 10 minutes ago, he tweeted the following. I'm quoting him quoting Dana White. But he says, anyone that wears sunglasses inside deserves to have that happen to them. Statement from Dana White. After my knee accident when I was wearing prescription glasses, as Tony Ferguson and Khabib Nurmagomedov were going to fight in the spring of 2018 when Tony was doing a round. This is me talking. Was doing a round of media. There was talk that as he was wearing his sunglasses inside, as you've seen him do many times, he tripped over them big, thick cable wires. I believe this happened on the Fox set and tore his anterior cruciate ligament. As we all know, he had a surgery. And then 5 months later, fought Anthony Pettis at UFC 229. It looked fabulous. And we thought, wow, this guy's the Wolverine. Because nobody comes back from ACL in 5 months. He did it. But those things that the UFC president tends to tweet out from time to time when he is bickering, don't think that some of those don't hit home. Look, Tony Ferguson was holding on to that one. You know, earlier I was talking about a tweet where Dana White was saying, you know, it was answering a fan saying that Tony's got some issues and we obviously want to get him back to health. Paraphrasing there. Who knows what this relationship's like? Tony, 7 minutes ago, tweeted, thick and thin, still a at UFC company man, WMEIMG, with the American and Mexican flag. I don't know. I don't know how to read into that one. How about you, Mr. Psychology? You got 30 seconds. What do you think, Goz?
They're just two completely different forms of thinking, which kind of goes along with what the issue is here. Really quick, just on what you were talking about, this on whether or not it could just be a misinterpretation of things he said. The fact that it's happened 5 times is what kind of takes that out. For people who have lacked sleep, because I know in one of them it said he hadn't slept for 3 days, you do weird shit when you don't sleep. But because this has happened 5 times, I think that kind of outrules that.
Yeah, and right. You know, the fact that thing about Dana with him, you know, giving him a little grief over the sunglasses incident and all that, I mean, that's a really apropos of nothing where this is concerned. It's not like Dana's making some kind of light about this situation. So I think that's probably a little misdirected from Tony's part.
We got to take a 60-minute break, and when we come back, we'll be talking to the Diamond, Dustin Poirier. He's got a big fight coming up in the lightweight division for that interim belt that Tony Ferguson once wore. So keep it locked in. We'll be right back.
Get down. Bandit calls to be the boss.
They were kicked off the set of The Fast and the Furious for being too loud and too good looking. Once again, here's Gorgeous George and Goes.
Our next guest has been undefeated over the past five fights and is working off a nine out of ten streak that includes skins on the wall like Eddie Alvarez, Anthony Pettis, Justin Gaethje. I'm talking about the Diamond Dustin Poirier, who on April 13th will be in a championship fight as he and UFC featherweight champion Max Holloway fight for the UFC interim lightweight title. It's UFC 236 in Atlanta, Georgia. Should be an awesome fight. I'm really looking forward to. For those that don't know, it's actually a rematch from a fight they had years ago when both guys were completely different. They're both way better now, badasses, superstars in the sport. We're excited to bring the Diamond on. What's up, Dustin Poirier? How are you, sir?
What's happening, man? Thanks for having me.
Man, thank you for doing the show. We always love having you here. And the fun thing is, Dustin, you're always matched up against another great fighter. You always have a fun fight that we can look forward to and talk about. Like, you haven't had a dud in a long time. A dud opponent, you know what I mean? I love this run you've been on.
I appreciate it, man. Yeah, you know, at the top of the heap, there's nothing but fun fights, and that's where we're at now.
Yeah, for sure. Along the way, what have you been enjoying the most from your recent successes, you know, that got you to this title fight? Is it the action itself? Is it the execution of game plans? Is it the tools that you've learned that have worked? Is it just the, you know, the fighters that you were able to fight and vanquish? What have you like loved the most about this run you've been on?
Man, all the things you just said, for sure. But just the journey, the whole, all of that put into just the journey and stretch of and growth as a fighter and as a businessman, just everything, dude. It's all good. It's all evolving for the better, and I'm just appreciative and grateful for the opportunity.
I don't know if anyone's ever broken it down to you, but your last three wins have come over a former WEC and UFC champ, a former WSOF champ, that's now the Professional Fighters League, folks, and a former Bellator and UFC champion in Eddie Alvarez. I mean,
I think
that
he was
right
a Bulldog
there.
Champ too. This guy's been collecting belts for a while.
Hell yeah, hell yeah. I mean, so you've been, like I call them, skins on the wall. You've had some big, big names there.
Definitely have, man. But it's just part of the journey. I'm thankful to be matched up with guys like that, and it's awesome to beat those guys, but it's just solidifying what I've always known, that I'm one of the best in the world, you know, and fighting and beating guys like that prove it.
Is that why you know you'll be a world champion one day? Because you've already beaten world champions?
That definitely helps that belief, but no, I just feel like I'm different than a lot of these guys, and when I set my mind to something, I find ways to make it happen by any means. And, you know, since I was 17, 18 years old, I set out the goal to be a world champion in mixed martial arts. And in my amateur career, won some small belts. In my pro career, won some, you know, small belts. And now we're at the pinnacle. It's time to collect this one.
You and I were communicating about 3 weeks ago, before this announcement was made. I just wanted to do a catch-up because, like I say, any name versus Dustin Poirier is an awesome fight. And so throughout the beginning of 2019, a lot of names were being thrown around on our show by, you know, fans of yours, by Goz and I. And I wanted to do a catch-up, but at that time, you were kind of sitting idle. You were at a standstill. Nothing was happening. I could tell you were very frustrated. And then all of this happened. Do you just chalk it up to that's just the way the sport is, business, where you're going to have some of those moments where you're sitting idle and you just have to get over them? Or was this really as bad as it seemed, where maybe you were even looking for another place of employment at the time?
That is the sport, man. Sometimes, and that's just the business of what we do at the highest level. You know, I was just in a rough spot. I felt like I was being punished and put on the shelf for other people's actions. I did nothing but show up and fight, make weight, and leave it all out there every time I went in. And, you know, I wasn't getting fights that made sense, I thought. I wasn't getting any offers, actually. And I felt like that was because of the whole situation at the top of the division with the champion and the top-ranked guy, Connor. you know, being suspended. We were all waiting for that hearing to happen, and when it finally happened, I was assuming there would be some clarity in the top of the division immediately after, and then a couple weeks went by, and there was still nothing started moving. So I was like, dude, what's going on here, you know? And then I just got really frustrated and wanted to fight, and wanted a fight that made sense.
Was it all worth it after you were able to negotiate a new contract, get the title fight? Are you pretty satisfied now?
Oh, dude, I'm excited, man. I'm busting my ass over here in Florida, and I can't wait to April 13th.
I've always told you you're a badass fighter. Even before you had this crazy run, you've always been one of the most exciting fighters on the roster. One of the most exciting fighters I've ever seen. Even covering you in the WEC, now the UFC, Goz has told you the same thing. The fans tell you the same thing. You, unless you're a big old dummy, you know you're a badass superstar. Do you think the UFC holds you in as high regard as they seem to treat some of these other names that have rolled off my tongue earlier today? Like, do you think they maybe take you for granted, or do you think have you ever heard from them finally give you your due respect?
You know, I think they're giving me my due respect here with allowing me to fight, challenge for this interim belt and prove that I'm one of the best. But, yeah, I think there's times in my career where I've been underpromoted and not pushed. And, looked past a few times. But that's business, man. That's just business. And destiny doesn't make mistakes. April 13th.
Dustin Poirier is our guest here on MMA Junkie Radio. Like he said, April 13th, he'll be fighting Max Holloway at UFC 236. It is for the interim UFC lightweight title. Dustin's the owner of 24 wins, and 19 of those have come via finish, 12 by KO, 7 by submission. All right, let me turn it over to the guys in Vegas. Goes, what do you have for Dustin Poirier?
Dustin, I ran into you at the airport a couple weeks ago, and the one thing that stood out from that encounter was you had this big old smile on your face. And I was thinking, with everything that's been going on in mixed martial arts, with, you know, now it's changed over time with rankings and television deals and all that stuff that comes along with it, you still seem to be having fun doing what you're doing. Is that accurate? Can you still look at these fights and call them fun?
They definitely are. I enjoy this, man. I started doing this because I just loved it. I was very passionate for this pure form of fighting, and I still am, and I'm excited to do it. And it's still a rush, and it's still, you know, I'm anxious for this fight, and I still have all those feelings I always had. So this is still a lot of fun to me. But at this point in my career, you know, I've made a decent living for me and my family. You know, I have a daughter now, and I'm just happy for all the sacrifices that I have made along my career, and the ups and the downs that helped make me into the person I am right now. I'm just good, man. I'm happy with what I've done in mixed martial arts, but I'm not satisfied. I got more to do, you know, and that's, I'm just enjoying the journey.
You know, with all these large platforms now and just the popularity of mixed martial arts, is there anything you can point to where sometimes they say, you know, with fame come a little bit of changes to your personality? Can you look at anything and just say it and say, yeah, you know what, maybe fame changed me a little bit in this regard?
I mean, I don't know, dude. You're talking to me like I'm a superstar here. I'm just,
you are.
When you're out there and people see your face on posters and people start seeing you on commercials and seeing you get deals and sponsorship deals and stuff like that, you definitely could have a lot of new friends. But I keep my circle tight, man, like it's always been. And I have the same people around me since I was, same management and same team since I was 19 years old. You know, I still have the same manager. Everybody who I started training with in Louisiana are still my really good friends, and I train with them, you know, probably half of the year. I come out to Florida and do my camps here, so I have a new team here. But besides, you know, switching to South Florida and getting a couple new coaches and stuff, my circle is really small, man, and these people are my friends. They're like my family, my coaches here. And, you know, if you make a couple mistakes, you might have some bandwagon people start filling in and stuff like that. But I've been married for, this is going to be 10 years this year, and I have a daughter now, so it's not like I'm out cutting up and doing things where people are pulling me different directions. You know, I'm pretty mentally solid. So nothing's really changed for me, man.
Do you feel like Dustin Poirier's our guest over here. The years?
I'm sorry?
What's that?
Do you feel like Gorgeous George has changed over the years?
You know, they say men get better looking with time, so he might be getting more gorgeous. I'm not sure.
All right. We also have Richard Hunter from the Phone Booth Fighting Podcast co-hosting with us today. Richard Hunter, what do you have for Dustin Poirier?
Yeah, Dustin, before I get to my question, not to disagree with you, but you said Destiny doesn't make mistakes. I dated a dancer named Destiny once, and she made a lot of mistakes. A lot of mistakes when I think back on it. Hey,
you made
you're
the biggest
only...
mistake.
That's right. Yeah, true. Yeah, whose fault is it? Yeah. Mine. Right. You know, you're the only person that's ever finished Max Holloway, the only person that's ever submitted him as well. And even though all the years have passed, as you've risen up the ranks yourself and you've watched his star rise, do you still see anything in his style that you feel like is going to make him susceptible to a finish or a submission from you that, despite the people that he's faced in the past, that's going to be something that's going to still be a real unique threat where you're concerned?
Nothing, honestly. Nothing that really jumps out. I haven't been crazy with watching footage. My coaches have started breaking down stuff, and we've started working on a few things. But me personally, I haven't really. I've watched his last fight twice. And, you know, as it gets closer, I'm going to start doing a little bit more watching. But he seems really well-rounded, honestly. But, you know, I have a lot of belief in myself and my abilities to make things happen in combat and in the fight, all I need is one mistake, you know, for him to dip his head the wrong way, or to grab me the wrong way, or to get up off the ground the wrong way, or to take a shot. You know, I can finish the fight anywhere. I feel like I'm very well balanced, and there's not a place the fight can go that I don't have an answer to something that he's doing. So all I need is one mistake or one opportunity, and I'm going to take full advantage of that, and I can finish the fight again.
You know, in the first hour of the show, before you came on with us, we were covering this breaking story about Tony Ferguson, and I don't know how up to speed you are and what's going on with that, but the concerns about possible, like, symptoms of CTE with him and things like that. I wanted to ask you, from your standpoint, you know, you're part of a big camp there. Do you feel like in today's MMA climate, because this is one of the things we were talking about, professional MMA climate, that everybody is properly focused on, especially like as coaches and training partners go and things like that, any fighter that's ever exhibiting any concerns of like mental issues and that sort of thing, do you feel like we're, as a sport, kind of where we need to be in terms of the earliest recognition of that kind of stuff, and also erring on the side of caution, even when there's a lot of money involved? Or, you know, what are your thoughts on that? And if you have any specific thoughts on the Tony Ferguson situation.
You know, I don't know a whole lot about his thing, about what's going on with him. I saw on Twitter today that people were saying his wife, they were retweeting stuff. Some about his wife probably complain or something like that. You know, I'm not sure the whole, I don't want to speak on it because I don't have all the information, and I don't want to speak on another man's name. I don't know his whole story. But, you know, I wish him and his family the best. You never want to see anybody go through anything like that. You know, I know he has kids and stuff. So, you know, I really wish them the best, and I wish him the best. I hope he's okay. I don't know him personally at all. But for me, at a big gym, you know, I definitely think we're the most educated we've ever been on brain trauma and on, you know, and on training smarter. But at the end of the day, we're not professional salsa dancers, you know what I mean? We're professional fighters, and that's the name of the game. You're going to get hit in the head, you're going to get beat up, but I think it's up to your coaches and up to yourself to educate yourself and just to be smart about your longevity in the sport. You know, over the years I've done a lot for myself, and you know, I don't train like I used to. But I still, you know, I spar and prepare for these fights, and I take shots to the head, and that's just what it is, you know. That's the line of business we're in.
Dustin, let's finish off with this. If you had, you mentioned you're not a superstar. We disagree. We think you are. You just might not have the celebrity of other superstars. But, I mean, in our sport, I mean, people love to watch you fight. And What I wanted to ask you was, going back to another fighter, fellow lightweight, that has had a problem this week, Conor McGregor. If it meant you would get more money, which would allow you to take care of your family and you reinvest back in your career and you set yourself up for your future, but it came at the cost of your personal space being invaded, a la what happened with Conor McGregor. Is that something you welcome and you'd be ready to deal with? Or do you see where Conor's from? Does it become too much at some point?
Oh, man, that's tough to say. I had never had to balance that type of lifestyle, so I don't really know. I can't speak on it. I've never been in the driver's seat of that way of living. But I just want to become a world champion and say that I did it, like I've said before. And I want to be comfortable financially with my family. You know, I want my daughter to be good, stuff like that. But I've never had dreams of being this guy that can't walk down the street. You know, I wouldn't. That doesn't sound like a fun way to live, man.
Mm-hmm. Have fans ever crossed the line and just put a camera in your face and taken a picture without even consenting, just because you're walking by? And maybe you know how fans are now. Their interaction is different from like when I was growing up. Excuse me, Mr. Reggie Jackson, can I get a picture? You know, you go through the whole formality, and now just people are just boom, 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 pick. Has anyone right. crossed the line, or have you had just those feelings of like, what the fuck are you doing, kid?
Every now and then I see somebody like taking pictures or filming without asking, but it's usually at events, so I can't, you know, I understand, like at a sporting event where there's a bunch of fans or a bunch of MMA fans, stuff like that. If I go to like a Saints game or something, I'll get a lot of cameras and stuff here and there. But if, you know, if I go to the grocery store right now, there's a chance I might run into somebody and be like, oh shit, it's Dustin, and they'll shake my hand. But everybody's been pretty respectful, and that's every now and then, you know. I'm not like I was saying, I'm not like that. It might happen a couple times a week where I run into somebody who recognizes me, but mm-hmm. only time I really get crowded is at an event.
Do you like it?
I'd rather somebody walk up to me, just the two of us in the grocery store, and say, hey, man, your last fight was nuts, man. I can't wait for the next one. I respect that. You know, I like that.
Are you guys American Top Team? Are you guys the Patriots? Like, do you think you're, like, I mean, you guys have had a lot of success, a lot of belts that just keep rolling through. A lot of your big-name fighters keep getting wins. A lot of fighters have, just like yourself, moved from another gym to yours and just taken their careers to another level. Like, would you say you're like the Patriots, the Warriors, you know, the Golden State Warriors? Or
I mean, dude, it's an institution for sure. We're doing big things at that gym. You know, we've got champions from all over the world and all over – organizations from all over. You know, we just added a new trophy case or belt case to the gym recently, and they started putting the 1FC belts and the welters, the fighting belts and stuff in there. So the gym's growing, man. It's strong. There's so much talent in there. On any given day, you can just walk in and there's the best fighters in the world, whether that be kickboxing, jiu-jitsu, MMA. And the fun thing about American Top Team is it's a revolving door. So you have the staple guys who live here and there permanently, but there's always guys doing camps. There's always people coming in and training for a month here, a couple weeks here and there. So every time I come to the gym and every time I do a new camp, I have new looks and so many different bodies and so many different coaches at all times to run stuff by. It's really a good place, man. If you're a young fighter looking for a spot to train and looking for lots of different opinions and different body types and different coaching styles, there's a lot of people on the roster, man, coaches and fighters.
Mm-hmm. That might make Conan or Mike Brown Bill Belichick, which would make Dan Lambert Robert Kraft. So tell him to stay away from Jupiter, Florida. People are getting in trouble down there.
Oh, man. But don't anyway, go get any massages out there.
How are the Saints going to do this year, man? You guys got so close last
year.
Dude,
I'm still upset, man. I'm still upset. That's what I was telling everybody when I was out in Atlanta. You know, I got a couple weird looks, but it should have been us, man. It should have been us that night.
I know you guys would have scored more than 3 points, that's for sure.
It's been a rough couple years, yeah, for sure. But it's been a rough couple years. You know, the year before we had the whoopsie daisy, and then the ref drops, you know, doesn't call the pass interference this year or last year. I'm sorry, and I think we're going to have a solid squad, man. Breeze has another good season left in him for sure.
All right, I know we've been lying to you for like the last 5 minutes. We keep saying it's the last question, but this one really is it, and I'm going to send it back to Goz. Goz, what is it?
I have a dumb question to add on to all my other dumb questions. That supermarket scenario, when you're at the supermarket and a fan comes up to you and goes, Dustin, what's up, dude? We all, as grown men, have something in our cart that we don't want people to see. What is it that you kind of cover with that big bag of Doritos?
Oh, dude, I can't do it. Dude, I'm on a strict diet, man. I wish I could. I have to hit on my boy George Lockhart. If my weight's right, I might be able to slide something here and there, but usually I can't. Maybe the bottle of wine for my wife in the basket, and people might be thinking I'm out there loading up on the wine, but, you know, mama likes a glass every now and then.
Even if I don't need them, I get that big bag of Doritos because it's very good to cover shit up with it. You can cover a lot of ground.
Oh, yeah.
For me, it's the Valtrex I picked up from the pharmacy. I don't want anybody seeing that.
Or the lubricant.
Yeah.
All right, guys.
I got to cover the Doritos Dustin up. The Doritos would be the bad thing in my basketball.
That's true.
Yeah, no shit. Thank you so much for the time. We always appreciate it. And good luck with the rest of your camp. And, you know, we'll be tuning in on April 13th, you and Max Holloway, part two. Cannot wait for it.
Thank you, guys, and I appreciate you having me on. It's going to be an incredible fight. I'm going to leave it all out there, and I'm coming home with gold, man. I just know it. I feel it in my bones. Tune in. It's going to be great.
That's what's up. That's Dustin Poirier, folks, on Twitter, at Dustin Poirier. Thanks for the time, DP. Take care. Have a nice evening. And, folks, we are going to take a break. You are listening to MMA Junkie Radio. We still got our daily debate to do, so I cannot wait to dig into that. And then we'll come back and circle back and talk about the big news involving Tony Ferguson and give you an update also on Conor McGregor. Stay close. It's the MMA Junkie Radio Show on Fight Nation, Channel 93. And we also have Richard Hunter from the Phone Booth Fighting Podcast co-hosting.
Alexa, play Fight Nation on SiriusXM.
Fight Nation on SiriusXM.
Pound for pound, one of the best fighters on this planet.
There are lots of ways to hear SiriusXM at home, including on devices with Amazon Alexa. Learn more at SiriusXM.com/Alexa.
The brothers Garcia seemingly can't agree on anything.
Everybody knows it's duck season.
Rabbit season.
Duck season.
Rabbit season.
Whether it's food.
Less filling.
Tastes great.
Less filling.
Tastes great.
Gambling.
Always bet on black.
I like red.
Black.
Red.
Black.
Red.
Black, dummy.
Or even social media.
Instagram.
Snapchat.
Instagram.
Snapchat.
The same applies to the biggest stories in MMA. Time for MMA Junkie Radio's Daily Debate.
Here we go, Vegas fellas. Today's hashtag daily debate for the at MMA Junkie Radio crew. Which UFC non-title fight main event are you most looking forward to over the next 5 weeks? Hashtag UFC London. Hashtag UFC Nashville. Hashtag UFC Philadelphia. Hashtag UFC St. Petersburg. So here we go. Till versus Masvidal. Remember, non-title fight main event. Thompson versus Pettis. Let me say the full names. Darren Till versus Jorge Masvidal. Stephen Thompson versus Anthony Pettis. Edson Barbosa versus Justin Gaethje. Alexander Volkov versus Alistair Overeem. Vegas guys, which one is it for you guys?
All right, man. This is a tough question, and I've narrowed it down to two. It's between Barbosa, Gaethje, and Till Masvidal. But my answer is going to be Till Masvidal, only because I feel like that fight's going to go longer. I feel like the Gaethje-Barbosa fight is going to be a little bit quicker, and I want to see a good mixed martial arts scrap, and I think that's what you're going to get with Darren Till and Jorge Masvidal.
Yep, that logic makes sense. I'm going to go Justin Gaethje, Anthony Pettis, because
you just said my logic makes sense.
Well, your argument that you're making does make sense. I feel mine makes more.
Oh, all right.
No, I'll tell you the difference for me, because those might be my two finalists. Masvidal and Till are pretty far apart in the rankings. Till, I think, is like sitting at number 3, and Masvidal's at number 11. So the same exact placement isn't really on the line for these two guys. What I look for when you're giving me this criteria is two guys who are basically in exactly the same spot in their division, and that's where Gaethje and Barbosa are. Barbosa's sitting at 6, Gaethje's at 7, so they're basically at the exact same point in the division, you know, win or lose, who goes up, who goes down, that kind of thing, what's on the line. That, coupled with the stylistic matchup and, to me, the guarantee of fireworks, that makes me select Gaethje and Barbosa.
All right, I'm going to hit you guys with a different take. All these fights are awesome. That's why it's a tough question. But because none of them have an impending title shot waiting in the wings, like, I don't see the winner of any of these fights fighting for a world title in 2019 because of a crowded division or politics or whatever, or maybe somebody's already working off a title shot. So because that's happening, I'm just going to enjoy them for what they are. Give me the potential of a knockout. Alexander Volkov versus Alistair Overeem in Russia, where somebody must die. If he dies, he dies. I like this one, man. I really do. I think both fighters have a different type of pressure on them. I think Overeem is one of those guys that just, you know, he's claimed a lot of titles in the past. He was a former Strikeforce champion, former Dream champion, former K1 World Max champion. The one that's eluded him, though, is the UFC. And then Volkov, he had that 4-fight win streak. Guys, he was on the verge, possibly, of him fighting DC instead of the Black Beast. And he lost. He took that KO. So he doesn't want that second one in a row. He doesn't want to become a gatekeeper. So I like that one, you know, especially because it's Russian versus a non-Russian. So I'm going with Volkov versus Overeem. Now, you want to hear the results?
All 30 seconds of those? Of that fight, George? That's what you're looking at?
I do.
That's how long you're going to be on the couch having fun. It's going to be over very quick. And I can't even tell you who's going to win. I just think one of those two guys is going to sleep, and it's happening fast. I'm still going to be tweeting round after round, "This is amazing!" while you two guys are off getting a hot dog or a rice cake, whatever you eat, Richard Hunter.
I just unfollowed you.
What are the results, George?
The results are nobody agrees with me except 4%. So take that, George. Yeah. The biggest majority went to the fights that were discussed the most, and leading the way is Edson Barbosa versus Justin Gaethje at 46%. Till versus Masvidal at 34%. Thompson versus Pettis at 16%. Volkov versus Overeem, 4%. Over 1,200 votes were registered, so we have quite the sample size. And there you have it. There's today's Daily Debate brought to you by the MMA Junkie Radio team and Richard Hunter from the Phone Booth Fighting Podcast. All right, guys. So we talked about the question for the Daily Debate. Now I want to ask you, let's just start with the one that isn't getting talked about too much, but is kind of right around the corner. It's a week from this Saturday, and that's Thompson and Pettis. We have a lightweight fighting a welterweight. It's the easiest way to put it, because I know Thompson's not going to run it back and cut to 55 and do what Pettis is doing, and that's moving away class. And I don't think Pettis is staying at 170. I really don't. It's just a matchup that sounds like fun. There's history between Rufus Sport, which is Pettis' camp, and Stephen Thompson. Both are stand-up guys. I could see an agreement here, a gentleman's agreement, to not even hit the ground. But it hasn't been talked about as much as other main events have been talked about. What are your guys' thoughts on it?
Well, I like Stephen Thompson as a person. I enjoy him as a mixed martial artist, but as a fighter, he's just not a guy that if I'm not going to buy a pay-per-view because of him. What would make me do it is, depending on the dance partner, or like how Richard stated, where is he at in the rankings? What's going to come out of this fight? What does it mean? In this fight, he just happened to be matched up against a guy that's really not going to mean anything. They're just going to kind of show up and fight. And Stephen Thompson's style just sometimes doesn't present good fights. So I'm sorry, I'm not really excited for it. How about you, Richard?
No, I mean, certainly not as excited against the backdrop of the other fights that we talked about. I mean, the bigger question for me these days would be Anthony Pettis. just because I think he's been real uneven, you know, over the last few years. And they're really, you know, there's a win-loss pattern with him, and there are, that always seems to be a legitimate question from fight to fight is, you know, is he going to look like he's really got the best game plan going, or is he, you know, is he just going to look a little, I would say lost is the right word, but you guys know what I'm saying. Inconsistency, I guess, is the concern. So I would be more concerned out of what we're going to see out of him where that's concerned, even more so than the fight you're going to get out of Stephen Thompson.
Did the UFC overthink this, guys, in booking this just to maybe freshen up the schedule and do something different for their fans? You know, and have you changed your mind? I guess when I don't want to be a hypocrite, but I think when I heard it, I go, oh, that's cool. That should be fun. But for some reason, I'm focused on Till and Masvidal, and I see Gaethje and Barbosa on the horizon and a few of the other fight bookings that have taken place. And this one's just kind of, I'm just going to probably worry about it on fight day. I haven't been as pumped, I guess, from maybe when the announcement was first made, or I don't know why I'm not feeling it.
Well, I think there's a little bit of a novelty aspect to it just because of the difference in weight classes and the point that you guys were making, and that beyond this fight itself, are there really going to be any immediate ramifications? Because, you know, you don't see Pettis staying at 170. So to me, it's more of anytime you're kind of throwing in that little bit of a novelty hook, that's exactly what you're doing. Is you're putting a little, you got a couple of, you know, a former champion and you, especially with like Pettis and the big name that he was all those years, you still got that legacy, but you're kind of at the point now where we got to put a little novelty spin on it just to get it some shine. And I think that's okay to do, especially for a one-off, but it probably does suffer in the grand scheme of things as a result.
I think I understand why they booked it. It's to me, I mean, maybe I'm completely off by this, but if you book Stephen Thompson, he's a tough fighter for just about anybody.
Agreed.
But you can't have him fight the champ. Actually, now you probably can work to that, but at the time you couldn't really do it.
Mm-hmm.
So what do you do with him? You don't want him to pick off some of your contenders. This is kind of the perfect matchup. It's a good name, and it's the other side of the equation is very exciting, and Anthony Pettis. So it just kind of buys time.
Yeah.
I think that's why they put it together.
Yeah.
All right, guys, let's take our last break. First, I want to give a shout-out to 101.5 FM KOCI, nonprofit community radio here in Costa Mesa. Classic rock. You should check it out. They are hosting me for the next few days. And let's talk about when we come back. We're going to update a little bit of a story that kind of started coming out last week, and that has to do with Matt Hughes and his twin brother Mark Hughes. Will also update Conor McGregor and that story where he had the, what do they call it, guys? A strong arm incident, alleged incident. Fan basically trying to take a picture of him, got his phone taken away, smashed, and not returned. So we'll update you a little bit there. And, of course, we'll talk about the big story of the day. Tony Ferguson's wife files restraining order after multiple police visits to the home. It's MMA Junkie Radio on Fight Nation Channel 93. Stay close. We'll be right back.
Champions, Hall of Famers, legends. The very best coverage of the fight game is right here on Sirius XM, Fight Nation Channel 93.
Blah, blah, blah. Here are those two dummies, George and Goes.
All right, guys, let's go back into TMZ form. Earlier this week, Conor McGregor got a little bit of trouble. Fan was coming out of Live nightclub. They were both walking through the Fontainebleau Hotel, and it looked like Conor was coming out of the Live nightclub, which is in the hotel. And a fan wanted a picture. Conor McGregor stole his phone. Kind of tricked him, I guess, a little bit. Stole his phone. Smashed it. Took the phone, didn't return it. Conor McGregor was arrested hours later when the police came to his hotel. He posted bail and went for a midnight jog, and now I'm going to update you guys since then. For one, a video came out on TMZ Sports, and it's pretty much like a looped video that only takes 3-4 seconds to watch, but it just shows McGregor actually taking the phone, stomping it as McGregor's security people get in the way of the gentleman who just wants his phone back. And it kind of sucks because it had a little bit of a like a little bully mentality, you know, instead of their lunch, it was his phone. So it kind of just sucked to see him act that way, I guess. Look, not that it would have been better, but if McGregor just would have taken the phone, flipped it over his shoulder, and just kept walking, let's say the phone just landed in a planter or something, it doesn't break, but now there's a distance of 50 yards between McGregor and that guy because he had to go in one direction. McGregor just kept walking. I feel like, God, that just would have been it. It would have solved the problem. The picture isn't taken or whatever, but now this guy's got to go to one back to court, and it's so dumb for him to be involved in this. But Richard, let's get your thoughts on the whole incident and goes. Have you seen this video? What do you guys think? And then I'll get to the next step that's taking place. 22-year-old Ahmed Abderzak. I'll tell you what he's done recently here in the last 24 hours. But go ahead, Richard. You go first.
Well, the first thing that comes to my mind is that Conor McGregor is manufacturing a crisis where one did not exist prior. So, all right, somebody, you know, wants to take a photo, you don't want to take the photo, whatever the scenario is. But listen, it's not like this guy had a Conor McGregor sex tape on his phone that he was about to upload, and Conor had to get that out of his hand. So the first thing that jumps to my mind is, what are you so worried about? If somebody's just trying to take a random picture or asking you to pose for one, what are you so concerned about that there can be no photographic evidence of? You know, this is like, you ever met the guy who's so homophobic and has to tell you how so straight he is all the time that you really wonder why he's so preoccupied with that? Then later on you find out maybe there was something else going on. Mm-hmm. Metaphorically, it's sort of like that, where the first thing that comes to my mind is, man, he sure seems worried about just one more photo from one more fan. And, clearly, and I will say this, in the few seconds of the video that is online now, you do hear the guy saying exactly what he said he was, which is, excuse me, sir, can I get my phone back, while it's busy being stomped into out of commission. So I really don't see where the reaction in any way could possibly warrant what this guy was doing.
Well, it'd have to be horrible for me to take a phone from somebody. That's one thing.
Mm-hmm.
Throw it on the ground and smash it. That's another. And then stomp on it. That's the person in the horror movie that says, all right, we just took out Michael Myers, but let's back up over him.
And pick it up and put it in your pocket.
Yeah, now that and also, then take it away.
That also tells me you weren't for sure, you destroyed whatever was on
you
it.
You want to make sure that is not coming back. And that's in a day and age with the cloud and all that. Like, that didn't even make sense to me. But whatever he took, it must have been really bad in Connor's eyes for him to react away. I don't think that was the reaction of, I'm just in a bad mood. I think that was the reaction of, I need to make sure this doesn't get out, whatever the hell this is.
Well, I read you guys the tweets the other day, you know, immediately from different people in mixed martial arts, and some were very humorous, like George Masvidal, you know, not talking about things that go down in his city, and, we got a kick out of that. But one of our colleagues on Fight Nation 93, former Strikeforce and UFC Bantamweight champion, she had an interesting take, I think a fresh take, that a lot of people really liked hearing, because she's kind of had a little bit of that level of superstardom, not to Connor's level for sure, but she's quite popular, you know what I mean, when she does go out about and does make public appearances. Let's hear that, Josh. Misha Tate's reaction.
You can't do that. You cannot take someone's phone. They can take pictures of you if they want. Unfortunately, it's annoying.
Well,
and
Josh,
I've had like the selfies, you know, where people think they're being so slick. They're in a restaurant and, you know, they're taking selfies or videoing you. And it's just
the
like stealth, you have to roll your eyes.
The stealth selfie.
But it's not breaking the law and it's not illegal. It's annoying, but it's not crossing the line. And here's the point where I think Connor went wrong is that he is a mega star. He has made himself into the one of the most recognizable faces, almost globally, but for sure nationwide here.
Yeah.
And he's making millions and millions and millions of dollars. You know, he's created that. So what I think is that this fan was out of line. He was disrespectful and probably should have had a little more common sense to just respect the space of Connor.
Sure.
With that being said, I guarantee you that guy has bought every single one of Conor McGregor's pay-per-views. So, I mean, you know, figure it out, Connor. Is it like, do you appreciate your fans, all of them, the one that are, you're making you rich or not? Like, blow the guy off. I mean, that's what you kind of have to do. It's the price of fame. That's what, you know, all this Beyonce, you, I mean, you name it, like so all the, you know, Brad Pitt, they've all, like, even worse than that, you see the TMZ guys sometimes go up there and like the paparazzi and they're just in their face. And sometimes they kind of explode and slam a camera down too. And then it's just bigger news. So it's not helping anything. And it's just some, it's the unfortunate thing that I think megastars and super famous people have to learn to put up with. And Connor's no exception. You cannot take someone's phone and.
I love that. I think that's great.
Yeah. Yeah, the one thing I would say, though, that probably still remains to be seen is, was the fan being disrespectful? I don't know. I mean, it still wouldn't justify what happened, but if it's, we don't know that that guy did anything other than just say, if he did even just say, hey, can I have a picture or something like that. You know, I always go back to, I had somebody tell me something one time. There was a very, very famous actor, still to this day, very famous actor, Academy Award winner. And I said something to him because I noticed that he's cool to fans. I mean, just he takes pictures, he signs autographs, whatever the deal is, wherever you're catching him. And he put it to me so succinctly. He said, well, here's the thing. He said, I've got 5 minutes for somebody to tell me they love what I do for a living. Bottom line. He said, is that, you know, because if you don't, you shouldn't be in the business, and secondly, you're sabotaging your own brand. He said, it's within reason. He said, of course you catch me at inconvenient times, and I can't be your best buddy and all the rest of that. But he said, if you're going to take a moment, tell me you like what I do, and can I sign something, I have a minute, I have a second for that. Yes, I do, because that's job security.
Mm. And what movies was he talking about?
He might have been talking about Sling Blade.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Huh. Okay.
What if that was two hot chicks that also came out of the club, or they had been in the club earlier, or they're just staying in that hotel, weren't in the club, but see Conor McGregor, and they had wanted the picture? You think Conor was so angry at that time that he would have done the same with them, or would he have said, sure, come on over here, ladies?
I have seen that exact scenario play out with a former UFC champion. Exactly word for word, the way you described it, I saw that happen. And be rude to a male. Nah, I'm not taking any pictures right now. Beat it, kid. And then two, not even the greatest looking girls, but came up. Can I get your picture? Sure. Come on in. Right. The guy was still there. I've seen that happen, George.
Look, girls, make no bones about it. I'd rather you not say who it is, though, at this point in time.
That's not that person. I've seen something pretty bad with that person, too. But no, not that one.
Here's the update on that. Aside from that video, McGregor is facing a civil lawsuit after being charged in South Florida with the stolen phone. Miami-Dade County court records show that 22-year-old Ahmed Abderzak filed a lawsuit seeking more than $15,000 on Thursday. Boy, that must have been some iPhone. Accusing the 30-year-old McGregor of battery, assault, and intentional infliction of emotional distress. Hand them that money and get it over with, right, guys? And just put an apology, and we all move on. It's the simplest thing, right?
Yeah, you have to at this point. I mean, you really do. If the reports are true of what he makes, that's going to be a drop in the bucket.
Maybe. Mm-hmm.
Quick up.
Let me tell you something. Let me. Mm-hmm. I will go. I'll reiterate this on the record. I believe one day you're going to see Floyd Mayweather broke. I think he's going to run out of money. So I always use that. I always use that as the example of if it can happen to him, if it can happen to Mike Tyson back in the day. Yes, drop in the bucket. It should be a drop in the bucket. But who the hell knows, man? We all know. We've all been close enough to this sport. How many times do you find out that you're like, man, so they're having money problems? Mm-hmm. And even the Conor McGregors of the world, because of situations exactly like this, where you're manufacturing major expenses where they didn't exist prior, there's no telling what kind of situation you end up in.
I'm already picturing the 30 for 30. They're doing the confessional. I had it all. Money, chicks, fame, and I blew it. Oh, boy. Quick update on Matt Hughes. He's suing his own brother for ownership of farming equipment. So I don't know if this these tractors are leading to, you know, their drama. We know that the wife has a restraining order as well, but there is a lawsuit, Hughes versus Hughes, filed on March 5th in Montgomery Court, Illinois Circuit Court. But check out this interaction of Mark Hughes talking about his twin brother, Matt Hughes. He says, Matt approached the tractor when my son got out of the tractor to ask his uncle what he needed. Matt physically assaulted my 15-year-old son, grabbing him, shaking him, all the while telling him that it's his expletive tractor. I imagine he said something to the effect of fucking. I don't know. Maybe he said bloody. Who knows? But, you know, he's got that going on with the twin brother. And I thought twins were usually like homies till death. And yet you got drama between these two all over John Deere 8410 tractor. And then there's also, you know, the restraining order with the wife. And what a mess, huh? I mean, it sucks because he's legend of the sport. But, you know, circling back to the news of the day with Tony Ferguson, I just wonder how much of this has to do with not that incident where he was in his truck and got hit by a train, but by pugilistic dementia. And I'm not pinning that on Tony just yet. It's just that he seems to be acting and saying, well, saying the bizarre things haven't been as big of a deal, but acting out and saying things not in the public, but to his family. And that's what led to the wife filing a restraining order after multiple police visits to the home. I want to reiterate, he has not laid hands on her or hurt her. Or her son, their son, I should say. He has not been arrested, but that was the big news of the day. But, you know, a sea of a little bit of that, tiny bits of similarity between Hughes and Ferguson.
Boy, you know your country when you're fighting over a tractor, don't you?
Yeah.
Pretty much, yeah. The 8410 John Deere, that thing's a bad boy.
Yeah, and, you know, that whole Matt Hughes thing is, obviously you can't ignore the fact that a lot of this stuff comes in the wake of this traumatic accident that he had, where a lot of the those accusations didn't really exist before. And, yes, he comes from the profession that he comes from, but, geez, you add to the fact that, you know, he had the accident that he had. And, you know, I'll just say this, When all of this came to light with Matt Hughes, a lot was made out of his autobiography that I think has been out 10 years or something like that. But that there were some passages in that autobiography that really exhibited some disturbing behavior. Now, in fairness, I didn't read a physical copy of the book. I read those transcripts of excerpts. But if those excerpts are correct, there's some concerning behavior in there that, you know, it maybe doesn't always ultimately rise to the level of what we're talking about now. But, you know, sometimes people exhibit warning signs to one degree or another, and certain things can happen later in life that just bring those things from latency to the forefront. And that's a whole nother level of concern I would have for Matt Hughes if those passages were accurate that I read that I couldn't even assign to any of the other fighters we're talking about.
Giver Saint, you have 30 seconds. What's up, buddy? Sorry to rush you, but we want to get you in. What's up? Any thoughts?
Do you think that Conor McGregor's starting to become the same type of malcontent that John Jones is right now, outside of the steroids? That's my question.
Okay.
Oof. Yeah, I don't think that's a bad comparison at all. Mm-hmm. It seems like it's going down the same road.
Yeah, and I'll tell you what is tough
bad decisions,
about that.
Yeah.
I mentioned this on the latest Phone Booth Fighting podcast because we were talking about the story, and I said, you know, I remember one of the first interviews that I had with Conor McGregor going back years now, and when it happened, I remember there was a John Jones incident that was happening that same week, one of the incidents, you know, one of the times that he tested for something or got in some sort of trouble, but it was in the news. And so that topic came up with Conor, and Conor wasn't yet to where he is today, but he was obviously already a big rising star and big things were going to be happening for him. And I remember this interaction with him because he specifically said to me in reaction to the John Jones news, he said, God, why is somebody doing that with all the money, with all the fame? How can anybody possibly do it? Like, he couldn't relate to it in a million years. And now look at it.
Yep. Catch the Phone Booth Fighting podcast with Richard Hunter and Frank Mir on iTunes. The latest episode just dropped, episode 229. Thank you to Dustin Poirier and Stephen Morocco for their time. We'll see you all tomorrow in 22 hours. Go out there and be a champion.